A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display? I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 133. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are talking about Hammer House of Horror. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. Yes, the Hammer House of Horror, a 1980 TV series, which, as the name suggests, came from the very famous British horror film studio, Hammer Film Productions. And it's a TV show with some episodes and some interesting stuff for us to talk about, Ryan.
Yes, that's right. It ran on ITV in 1980, as you said. It ran for 13 episodes that were about 50-51 minutes each. And as you can see, we are talking about horror rather than science fiction this time. So one of our little trips into a related genre. And I think it's the first time that we're going into sort of full-out monster horror. We've done a little bit of psychological horror, but this is really going into more classic British-style horror. And we have feature performances from lots of well-known British TV actors and British science fiction actors, so it's nice to see some of them showing up in this.
Yes, absolutely. We'll be ticking off lots of very familiar and well-known names as we go through. And as well as it being a sort of out-of-out horror series, Brian, it's also, I think, possibly the most adult series that we've titled. In that this is very specifically an adults-only show. There's a fair bit of gore, and I think there was a fair amount of gratuitous sort of nudity and semi-nudity throughout the show. So this was an adult slot, I think, for this particular series.
Yes, in terms of the gore and the nudity, that this is probably more than we've had in any of the other shows that we've talked about so far. So getting into the setup, this is an anthology series in that the episodes are really not connected to each other. There are 13 standalone episodes, each one with its own cast, different from the other episodes, and each with its own story and context. And generally, there is a twist ending that fits into that sort of horror tradition that comes in at the end as well.
And as we said, we are really in the horror genre, and so we're going to cover lots of the horror standards in these 13 episodes. For instance, there will be witches, there will be werewolves, there'll be haunted houses, demonic possession, and even grave robbers. So lots of the sort of horror standards being brought out in these different episodes and these standalone stories.
Yes, you have lots of those kinds of things with hauntings and what have you. An example that sort of sets the tone is the first episode, or in some orders of it, the first episode, Witching Hour, where you have a 17th century witch reappearing at the farmhouse where she was born and tormenting the people who live there now, a musician and his wife who live there in the present. So you get these kinds of things that really do fit into those sort of classic horror and Hammer horror traditions.
And yes, while we're talking about that episode, which was, as you say, Brian, the first episode broadcast, I think, in most regions, but as you say, this was a 13 standalone episode, so the broadcast order did vary in different areas. But yeah, the musician and his wife, played by John Finch, who you may know from Roman Polanski's film version of Macbeth, and his wife, Prunella G, a very sort of famous, sort of well-recognisable British actress. And then interestingly, the witch herself, played by Patricia Neal, who most people will be familiar with from the Rocky Horror Picture Show movie. So, you know, some interesting actors cropping up right from the start. And as we say, we've got this sort of witch story and her coming back to torment the people who now live in this farmhouse. So right from the start, we know where we're going with Hammer Horror.
So let's talk a little bit more about some of the actors that show up in here.
Okay. We don't have what we normally have in when we get to this part of our discussion, the recurring characters, because as you say, we've got 13 individual episodes. And the only character who you could say is recurring is a shadowy figure that was sort of glimpsed in the titles. And I'll come back to him in a few moments. But we do have, as we've mentioned, a host of British genre actors, stars and character actors from the time. So, for instance, I guess we'll get the biggest name out there straight away. Peter Cushing is in one episode. Legendary Hammer Horror actor, but also famous for lots of other stuff he did, including the two film Doctor Who movies, and I suppose for playing Moff Tarkin in Star Wars, Brian. He's perhaps most known for those.
Absolutely.
We've also got people like Brian Cox, who's come up here on British Invaders before, Denholm Elliott, who most people will know from the Indiana Jones movies, and a very well-known British name, Diana Dawes, crops up in one episode. Used to be a well-known sort of glamour actress, and this is an older sort of character actress, Diana Dawes. So, straight away, some big names in this series.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are lots of well-known names from the science fiction genre as well. You have Gareth Thomas and Paul Darrow, both well-known from Blake 7. Kevin Stoney, who was in Doctor Who a few times, and The Tomorrow People, and many other things. Always interesting to see him. Ian McCulloch, who was one of the leads in Survivors, shows up. Janet Fielding, who was a Doctor Who companion, Tegan. And Jeffrey Beavers, who played the Master on Doctor Who in one of the late Tom Baker stories, The Keeper of Traken. So you have lots of people showing up there.
That's right. And we'll mention a few more, perhaps slightly less known for their genre work, but we noticed them as we were going along. Anthony Valentine, who was in the Robin of Sherwood production that we watched, but is also famous for the TV show Colditz. Angela Bruce, an actress who appeared in both Red Dwarf and Doctor Who. James Cosmo is a name that comes up reasonably often on British Invaders, particularly for his appearance as one of the police officers in The Nightmare Man, an interesting show that we covered way back, Brian.
It's always fun to see James Cosmo show up.
He is very good. And then there's an actress called Catherine Lee Scott, who is perhaps best known for the American TV show Dark Shadows, and she features in one episode here as well.
Ah, yes, of course.
So, as we said, various genre names, and again, you can almost play the sort of British Invaders bingo as you go along and connect some of these names to other shows that we've talked about in the past.
Absolutely.
It can't just be all coincidence, can it?
Yes, it can. Horse riding is a hobby. Like shooting, people do get killed doing it.
And Phil? What about Phil?
Stop it, Graham. You can't start tying everything together. It was an accident. Accidents happen. People who ride horses do get killed, and villains do get bumped off.
Villains? What villains?
Well, we will get into some of the individual stories and things in time, but I think you have the idea that this is sort of a bunch of classic-style horror stories, so let's get into some of the some production notes for this.
Okay, well, we have Hammer Film Productions, a famous British horror film studio, which started way back in 1934, and early on, they weren't known for horror films. Their sort of early productions were what were called quota quickies. And these were cheap films which were produced very cheaply and very quickly. And they were to comply with a bit of British law that said that cinemas had to show at least 10 British films every year. And as you can imagine, this was a law introduced to try and support the British film industry. And the consequence was that studios like Hammer were turning out films incredibly quickly, so that cinemas would have enough British films to put alongside their American, their sort of Hollywood films they were showing. And that's what they did for their early years. And then we get to the 1950s, and in particular 1951, they moved to the Down Place Studios alongside the River Thames, which I think is sort of like the most famous studios associated with Hammer. And that's where they're going to start producing some of the films that will lead up to this TV show.
That's right. And once they were there, they did continue producing cheap films and some, you know, early British sci-fi films and that sort of thing. But there was a big landmark for them in 1955 when they started doing remakes of the BBC Quatermass serials. We talked about Quatermass a long time ago now, and the original Quatermass experiment on the BBC came out in 1953, but in 1955, Hammer did an adaptation of Quatermass called The Quatermass Experiment, experiment starting with an X, and that was directed by Val Guest and starring the American actor Brian Donlevy. So that was sort of a bit of a shift for Hammer at that point.
And that's right. And they were deliberately going for an adult film-going audience. And so, as you say, they retitled The Quatermass Experiment to spell it with this big X at the start, because that tied into the X certificate for films, which had not long been introduced at this point. And an X certificate meant 18s and over. And so they were really sort of pushing hard that this was adult horror. And the Quatermass Experiment was a big hit for Hammer Studios, so much so that it was fairly quickly followed by Quatermass 2, another film which is almost an attempt to make another Quatermass movie called X the Unknown, and then finally the adaptation of the third Quatermass story, Quatermass and the Pit, where I think Andrew Keir takes over as Quatermass.
That's right.
Yes, from Brian Donlevy. And it's probably the best of the three Hammer adaptations of the Quatermass stories, I think, Brian.
Yes, that one was quite a bit later. It was done in the 60s. But X to the Unknown was actually going to be a Quatermass story, but it would be an original one of their own, and they did not get permission from Nigel Neal, who had created Quatermass, to do that, to use that character. So it became a different film in a similar style.
Yes, I think it's reasonably well known that Nigel Neal was not altogether happy with the adaptations of his work into film by Hammer. So yes, he didn't really give them permission to make a new Quatermass film. But there you go. And then in 1957, we have one of Hammer's most famous horror movies, which really set the ball rolling for their sort of reputation as a horror film studio. And this film is The Curse of Frankenstein, which is also famous because it brings together, I think for the first time, Brian, Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee, with Cushing playing the role of Frankenstein and Christopher Lee playing the creature. This was a remake of the Frankenstein story, but they had to design a new sort of creature makeup because they couldn't use Universal Film Studios look. So they went for a different look, and I think in keeping with the Hammer sort of style, this was quite a gory film. They ramped up the gore, and the effect was, I think, quite stunning and very successful at the time.
Yes, and that, I think, was what launched Hammer into this Hammer horror tradition, where they did the tremendous number of horror films and sort of almost set this British horror film tradition that has a different feel from the newer horror films you see and the American horror films. It was sort of a nice little style they had going there in the late 50s and in the 60s and so on. And it went into this series of horror films where they did Dracula many times, and they did The Mummy, they did Curse of the Werewolf, they did Dr. Jekyll, they did many of these different kinds of things, and very often Peter Cushing or Christopher Lee or both would be involved in these different various films. And their trademark. They had, you know, a lot of gore for sure, and they had these gothic settings and some sort of spooky atmosphere at times, too. They had an interesting style there that is different from what you see now, I would say.
Yes, it is quite different. It was very sort of characteristic of Hammer. You sort of knew when you were watching a Hammer movie, really.
And by the late 1970s, the company was actually struggling to avoid bankruptcy. You know, they had gone through this very successful stage of things in the 50s and the 60s and to a point in the 70s. But I think by then, horror was starting to move on to something else rather than what Hammer had been doing.
Yes, they were clearly struggling in the 70s. And one of the producers, a chap called Roy Skeggs, came up with this idea of a TV series. And in particular, a TV series that they would be able to sell abroad and to the profitable North American networks. And he suggested a sort of modern-day approach to traditional Hammer horror themes. And the show would be, as we've said, it would be adult-orientated. It would be for a late-night viewing slot. There would be gore and there would be nudity. And that was where, really, I think, the idea for this TV show came from.
Yes. And it was funded by ITC, Lou Grade's ITC company, which was associated with ITV, of course. So this would be an ITV network broadcast in the UK. And they had, for writing the first script and for script editor for the full series, they had Anthony Reed working on it, who had been a script editor for Doctor Who in the 1970s for a while, and he would go on to work on the John Wyndham adaptation Chalky later on.
More British Invaders links for us there.
Oh, absolutely. And you had directors like Peter Sasdy, who did the Stone Tape, and Don Lever, who worked on The Avengers and an episode of Beasts called Dummy. So definitely some people with some good British TV background there coming in to work on it.
Okay, then we've also got suitably spooky theme music composed by Roger Webb, which is played over a title sequence of a gothic house in sort of twilight, and a strange figure is seen on a roof and then again at a window of the house. And he's the, as we say, he's perhaps the only character who recurs. And I did read somewhere that he may have been intended to be a character either known as the Man in Black or as Count Karnstein, who was a sort of stand-in for Count Dracula in a series of Hammer films known as the Karnstein Trilogy. So it's possible that might be a connection. But as I say, I've only seen that referenced on one fan site about this Hammer House of Horror TV show. But there he is in the titles. And the house itself is Hampden House in Buckinghamshire, which at the time was owned by Hammer, was used as partly as their headquarters. But obviously they did a lot of filming there because in darkness, it looks very spooky, I think, Brian. It certainly does in the title sequence.
Yes, it does.
And we know that this went out in September 1980, and we know that it was, as I say, a late-night post-Watershed slot. And there it was, these 13 episodes, as you've said, about 51 minutes each, and out on the ITV networks.
Yes, that's right. And it was successfully sold to the North American networks and was broadcast in the US and in Canada as well.
Alison!
Master. May I beg you?
You have done well, my friend.
Okay, So, the availability of this show, if we've sort of piqued your interest in it, as we say, 13 episodes. There's a Region 2 DVD set of all the episodes. Not much in the way of extra features, just some photos and cast biographies on there. But it is fairly cheap to get hold of. Here in the UK on Amazon, it's about £12, or maybe even cheaper if you're looking for second-hand copies on the marketplace. It's also on the Love Film rental site, and it's also on iTunes, which doesn't happen too often with the shows we cover, but here is one that's on iTunes, £1.89 an episode, or you can get the whole bundle for £9.99 at the moment, so quite a reasonable deal there on iTunes.
There is a Region 1 version that is floating around on Amazon.com. But it's a little bit obscure. It's actually selling for $50. So you may be better off bringing in the British version. Or if you're in the US, you can buy individual episodes from Amazon Instant for $1.99 each. So that's not too bad. And I understand, Eamon, that there are some episodes on YouTube at the moment?
They're up there at the moment. Yes, there are a few episodes there, including an episode called The Silent Scream, which we'll be talking about in our next show, and the episode Witching Time that we mentioned earlier on. So yes, there are various ways to watch some of this show before we come back next time, if you want to.
Yes, certainly those iTunes and Amazon streaming options look like a pretty good option for this one. So that brings us through the first half of our discussion about Hammer House of Horror. Next time, we will talk about some of the lasting impact and influence of Hammer House of Horror. We will, of course, in that line, mention the sequel series that came along later, which was Hammer House of Mystery and Suspense. And of course, we will get to discuss some individual episodes. So you will hear something about what actually happened in some of these episodes.
Yeah, we're going to cover some of the episodes in a bit more detail, particularly our favorites. And we're also going to get to our own reviews and recommendations about this show. So some interesting stuff to talk about when we come back, Brian.
Absolutely. You can reach us at BritishInvaders@gmail.com. And you can find us at www.BritishInvaders.com. We have a Facebook group. If you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find us there. We are also part of the Geek Culture Network. You can look at thegeekculturenetwork.com and see us there as well. And we are now also on Voice of Geeks, the streaming radio network that you can find at vognetwork.com. So you can find us and listen to us in all sorts of ways.
Absolutely. Lots of places to find us now.
That's right. So thank you for listening. And this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you very much for joining us. And do come back next time. And until then, this is Eamon in England saying goodbye.